This is ArtBeat, WMUK's weekly look at creativity and the arts in Southwest Michigan. I'm Zinta A-Stars. Translating poetry across cultures is tricky. Just ask Hedy Habra, a poet and artist who taught Spanish at Western Michigan University. Her newest poetry collection is Taste of the Earth. Or Dasha Nisala, a retired professor of Russian and world literature. She reads from her new translation of Slavko Mihalic's poetry, Music is Everything.
And Slavko Mihalic is a Croatian poet, and the arts essentially dominated his life. He initially was going to become a musician, then an artist, and finally the word won out. So I'm going to read a poem from that collection. It's entitled Mozart's Magic Coach. The earth, too, is a magic coach, my dear. Look at the flocks of elves that pull it down dark, virgin forests of the universe. And a witch or two, it's known, would like to diverge it into a coy ditch in a passionate embrace. But there is a coach within the coach. The traveler is a boy who keeps changing his face from town to town, golden or lousy one, from tavern to tavern in the forest among ancient trees that sing slowly, swaying their heads on the slopes of fields where wizard plowmen pull golden grains from sensual depths of the earth, from hills to violins and tempestuous timpani. My dear Mozart, sometimes he's a coachman. At times, even horses pull the coach skyward, so frightened winds disperse to all sides of the Danube, Vltava, and the Rhine. Sometimes a lascivious traveler who drinks the sweetest wine from women's lips, from bell-shaped breasts, because music is everything, since music can do everything. When music ceases, all the magic is only a modest craft. As shoeing a horse echoes flutes when the blacksmith is Mozart, and a jug of wine sings if Mozart's lips touch the oboe. Rain begins to glisten, footsteps make sense, hills turn azure, streets race, and curtains are the bare backs of women when on its own plays Mozart's piano.
What is different with your work is that it's translations. Now, personally, I am bilingual, and I've always found that translating is even harder than writing an original, because you have to figure out what that poet was thinking and feeling and find an accurate phrase or word. And to me, that's incredibly challenging.
You're absolutely right. And I will use the words that a Russian poet, Vyacheslav Kuprianov, who came once to WMU, and we did a bilingual reading, and he told me himself, he's a poet and translator. He said translating is much more difficult. And then I want to add also Slavko Mihalic's comment. He has a poem in which he says that a poem looks for its poet. And I'm saying a poem looks for its translator. This helps me understand why I have never translated a whole book from cover to cover by a single poet. I always have to find out which poems are speaking to me, which are looking for me, that is to say, and then I go for those. So if there is any good, if this is a good translation in any way, then perhaps this poem was looking for me.
Ah, I like that. Every culture has its own way of looking at the world. That's where I would get frustrated. How do you deal with that when you have a concept or a word or a phrase that simply doesn't exist in English?
Well, translating a poem takes many drafts.
Oh, I'm sure.
And each time you look at it, look at the draft, you think of something else. And if you are very deep, you have to really know the language and you have to feel that poem, and the words will come, they will come. If you are in it, you have to be in it for a long time, I guess.
This is ArtBeat on WMUK. I'm Zinta A-Stars. Hedy Habra reads from A Taste of the Earth.
Two fawns cross the creek. One of them pauses, linked to his mirror reflection by the tip of his tongue. Parallel worlds merge onto the fault line of a folded image. A musical phrase sticks to your skin. The wind espouses ripples. Liquid dunes lick the shoreline, give moisture to wild brush, blown over seeds and thoughts. Iridescent hummingbirds hover over purple iris blooms. The shore is faithful to the stream's first touch. Like first love, it nourishes tendrils rising into a green flame. Never forgotten, like the taste of the earth. A desert thirsts for an oasis. A fawn melts into the music of a fable, a gazelle. New memories map rhizomes, twisting, anchoring us farther with each shoot, spreading from our birthplace to everywhere we've lived, to where we live now. And does it make a difference if the root remembers?
Does it, Hetty?
Yes, indeed, it does. I think that in every place we've lived, we make roots. And when we part with these places, these roots are still alive within us. And I was born and raised in Cairo, in Heliopolis, Cairo, Egypt, and then moved to Lebanon, left Lebanon at the onset of the civil war, and then lived in Greece and Belgium, where my husband was transferred, and then came to the States in 81. So this is a sort of succession of planting trees in the yard and making friendships and absorbing cultures, and all of that is something that we can't erase.
When you wrote this collection, was this based on returning home in your mind's eye or an actual trip home?
I did take one actual trip home 25 years after the war had started. Beirut was reconstructed, and so this is what triggered one section of the book. The third section was about going back physically, but this collection was in the make for 12 years, and so I've been in my mind always going back and keeping, you know, all those memories alive, and also watching what was going on and lamenting the fact that there were still lots of sequels to the turmoil.
I'm Zinta A-Stars. You've been listening to WMUK's Artbeat, our weekly look at the creative arts. I've been speaking with Dasha Nisula and Hetty Habra. They will read from their new work at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, January 21st at Kazoo Books. Join us every Friday at this time for Artbeat. Thanks for listening.